You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You are with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. We're walking this road of life together, sharing our hearts, swapping our stories. You can email me your stories, your thoughts, your comments, your concerns, your suggestions for topics, anything you'd like to hear, from medications to food to nutrition to the outside, the outdoors, to dogs, to relationships, whatever you would like. Just give me a little heads up and we will see what we can do. You can be anonymous. You can also request, as some people do, that the topics be brought up, but that we don't reference you in the show. And that's just fine too. So any way that you'd like to go about this is fine with me. It's just important that we're here today, that we breathe in, that we have another day of life, and that we have some moment of gratitude in that life. Wherever you're at, take just a little second and be thankful for something. And we sometimes package that, what we're supposed to be thankful for, we package it, well, you know, I can't be thankful for my family because my family's abandoned me, or they've run off to a cult or something. I can't be thankful for what's happening to me in my personal life because I was just had a bad diagnosis, or I had a financial downturn. But let's then look, open the door. Thank you for a breath. Thank you for one breath. Thank you for my breath. Thank you for the sky. Something. There's going to be something. Even if you feel hungry and you eat something and you're a little bit satisfied, thank you that I'm able to discern this, that I'm able to have control over my own, what goes in my mouth and what doesn't, which will kind of bring us up to Lent here in just a second. Today, I want to talk about a really great concept that I will share with you that came from an article that is actually featured in Healthy Catholics, which is an interesting little website that I just found. And I haven't really explored that much except for this article. But I like the concept. I do like the concept, kind of bringing in the reality. Sometimes we think that in regards to our mental health, depression, obsessive compulsive disorder, eating disorders, anxiety, schizophrenia, all these are mental health disorders, among many others. I'm just naming a couple off the top of my head. Also have personality disorders. Those are also mental illnesses. That's a whole different ballgame. Borderline personality disorder, dependent personality disorder, all these different personality disorders, which are a different category, but they're still mental illnesses. There are certain narcissistic personality disorder that are tenacious and destructive. They have different characteristics. And maybe if you're interested, we'll get into each one of those. I usually talk about depression or some of the big ones that we all are familiar with, because I do try to tie in the spiritual, the everyday reality, the fact that in our lives, we're going to have some mental illness at some point. One out of four worldwide has a brush with mental illness sometime in their life. That's not very... Let me reverse that. That is very, I can't even think of the words. I need my big people words here. I can't seem to find the right words. Pretty likely that we're going to have some brush with mental illness. So you're not going to escape it. And if there's one in four and you have a family of four, one of you will have a brush. Now, that's kind of simplistic. Maybe the whole family has it. Maybe your family doesn't have any mental illness at all. They cannot think of one thing that's ever been handed down in their family. Not one uncle who's addicted, not one schizophrenic, not one person that ever had depression. These are mental illnesses, and it really does occur a lot in all different families. So when we talk about that, and we talk about releasing the shame, releasing the stigma, it's kind of at the center of the things I like to go to, the things I want to talk about, the things that are important to me, is that when we're feeling it, when we are in the midst of relapsing, or we're in the midst of a full-blown reoccurrence of a depression, anxiety, perhaps you are schizophrenic and you've been taking medications and they quell the voices in your head, or they quell the other things that go on, or you have a schizoaffective disorder, or you have some other problem, and then all of a sudden you have a resurgence and you can really start to feel demoralized. Well, I've done everything I'm supposed to do, and here I am. One of the things that occurs with depression and other mental illnesses is that we just cannot seem to get it right, get it out of our heads, no matter how we all try, no matter how the advocates try, no matter how the physicians and social workers and patients and everybody try. We all try to destigmatize, but we're still mired with the thought that somehow we just are too weak. We aren't something enough. Now, think about this. Part of the diagnosis, if someone comes to me or someone else with some symptoms and you're listening and you ask your questions, one of the hallmarks of depression is a very, very bad self-esteem. Feelings of doom, feelings of helplessness and hopelessness. Those are key marks, helplessness and hopelessness, with or without suicidal thoughts. And with all that helplessness and hopelessness comes lack of self-esteem. Now, you may have a normal lack of self-esteem. Most of us have somewhere that we have a lack of self-esteem, no matter how successful we are. So this is par for the course in something like depression. So where does that leave us? Where that leaves us is that you already have a built-in low self-esteem monitor. It's already built in if you happen to be depressed. So you're prime to think, what is it that I haven't done? What am I not doing good enough? I'm not good enough. So therefore, I must be a failure at my spiritual practice. I must be a failure to my family. I must be a failure in my relationships. I must be a failure in life. We have so many people that we know. I know you know these people. You might be one of them. Where someone else tells your accomplishments and you feel weird inside, because something in you is telling you, something somewhere is saying, oh yeah, but I'm really not that good. You feel like a fraud. You feel like they're not really, if they really knew the real me, they really knew the real me, they wouldn't feel this way. Or you're afraid. Or even having a close relationship with someone, a spouse. And your husband is supporting you, telling you, whether it's that you're beautiful on the inside, you're talented, you're musical, you're clever, whatever it is. And you just feel like, yeah, you cannot accept it. Not false modesty, you really can't, because you think, but they really don't know who I am. And then we get sunk in that Catholic trap. And what I mean by a Catholic trap is we indeed can have a Catholic trap. And that Catholic trap is that we have a ready-made system that can be utilized in the wrong way. That's why we guard against, and our priests guard against, scrupulosity, where you just can't, you just feel like you just can't get clean. You cannot go to confession enough. You're saying, wait, you're just going on. You're diving into this obsession because you're so unclean. So we have this idea of utilizing some time, just like your already low self-esteem can get magnified during depression, or you may not have low self-esteem, you have a bout of depression, all of a sudden you have no self-esteem, you're afraid to go out, you're afraid for people to look at you, you can't, you just don't see anything right about yourself. And those are kind of feed on themselves. And so if that happens and you start thinking, well, I must be bad at, and then you fill in your blank, whatever's in front of your face at the time. And that can happen with the idea of, I must just be spiritually so on the wrong track, so bad. So I can't be forgiven. Every little thing is just an insult to God. That's a danger sign. That's scrupulosity. And the Catholic trap is that a priest, unless he knows you well and you go to the same confessional all the time, can say after about the 10th confession in a row, saying, you know, maybe you better think about this. Maybe you should see somebody. Priests have family members who do that. And they are very astute with saying, you know, maybe Aunt Betty really should go and see a counselor. Maybe they're depressed. Maybe they have some physical thing going on. So that's kind of a prelude into what I want to talk about, that there is a common sense Lent, which I thought was a really great little way to put it, which came from this article in Healthy Catholics. So it's healthycatholics.com, I guess. So I'm going to talk to you about that on the other side of the break. We're going to look at some ways in which you can take some very simple things as you approach this Lent, and you can approach this Lent and practice this Lent in a way that will be very nurturing for you. So when we get back from the break, we will discuss this and other things. You can call me at 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you're with me today on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. I'm getting off to such a slow start, but I am getting better for this jet lag. It's so crazy that I have had this for years, ever since going back and forth from the Eastern time zone to the Western time zone back again. It's always the same pattern. Something about that just throws me off. And I've had people tell me, world travelers, people that go to just 3 and 4 times a year, go to different parts of the world, will say that the 3-hour time difference gets them more than going to Singapore or going to Russia. It's just something. I don't know what it is, but whatever it is, it's really got me. And it's usually the third day and I start kind of perking up and I am a little bit better, but I'm still not right on my game. So thank you for being patient with me. And I probably should have loaded up on more coffee. So when we're going to this, I cannot find my words, so you're just going to have to deal with that today. They're somewhere back in the Eastern time zone. I think it's really important to approach Lent, almost a pre-Lent. And the reason I want to do this is because I think that when we get right up on Lent, when I get right up on Lent, I start to say, okay, it's Lent, Ash Wednesday, what am I going to do? How's this going to happen? What's it going to look like? And I had a very good Lent last year. And I shared a lot with you last year. But I started thinking about it. And I started thinking about the different ways we seem to come at things in our own, within our own framework. We have a certain thing in mind that we do. And we do it all the time without thinking because it's our second nature. We have ways, we have blind spots in our lives, and we have very patterned ways of doing things. We are creatures of pattern, creatures of habit. That's why we need time to break habits, because they become ingrained. It becomes the way we navigate. So I try to look for things that help us turn our way of thinking on its ear, turn our natural proclivity into a little different perspective. Take a look at something a little differently. Now, we will go into more things as we get closer to Lent and also in Lent about very specifics, like if you have an eating disorder, how do you approach Lent? If you have an addiction, how do you approach Lent? If you're depressed or if you're ill, how do you approach Lent? What are some of the things that you can look at? We'll go into those. But today I found this perfect article for turning things on its ear, because as oftentimes happen when we really look at things, look at, let's say, what they used to call the seven deadly sins. Now they're the seven capital sins, but the seven deadly sins, because following them is going to just lead you really down a no return path, gluttony and avarice and all that. We talk about gluttony in food. As an example, gluttony can be a gluttony of anything. What you stuff yourself with. You can be, as say, the old cliche, a glutton for punishment, a glutton for things, for collections. You can be a glutton for little figurines, where that becomes something you just can't get enough. And sometimes we call them our collections, and collections can become very valuable. They can become pieces of art. It's true. At the same time, where are we? Where are we on that? Have we slipped over from eating a delicious full meal of anything, whether it's metaphorically or physically, and when it becomes gluttony? So in this article on, it's actually called People of Nineveh and a Mental Health Lent, and it is on that Catholic website, Healthy Catholics, Promoting Psychological and Spiritual Wellness. And I have not really looked all the way through it, so I cannot exactly say, yeah, this is all right on. And I skipped around a little bit because I wanted to see, just in general, what are we talking about here? And there are a few things I'm going to pull out because they really fit in with what I wanted to talk to today. One of the things they brought up, which I thought was really great, and this is a really important thing, as I've said, on this program, we do not diagnose or treat. On this program, I want to educate. I want to share experiences. I want to bring in the spiritual. I want to give you a very well-rounded picture and always encourage you, if you need that help, that you get that help. All right? But one of the things that they bring up, which I think is lovely, is that people with mental health issues can, they call it following a particular evil way, which they went back to Jonah. So they were quoting Jonah, when God saw by their actions how they turned away from their evil way. And then that's Jonah 3:10. So they're using that language. They're not calling you necessarily evil or me necessarily evil. So, but they're challenging. What is your evil way? What is the way in which you need to turn away? Well, many of us with anxiety, depression, OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, eating disorders, one particular way that we do tend to err is that we pretend that we don't have to change. We pretend that everything's okay. We pretend. Now, I don't necessarily love the word pretend, because that implies to me that we know the reality and we're choosing to play dress up. I don't actually go there. I don't like that word, but I'm not going to get hung up on the semantic, just like I'm not going to get hung up on the semantics of evil way. The gist of this whole thing is that we have a tendency to keep waiting, especially when you're creeping into that depression, if you have something right off the bat that's completely over the top, you've got yourself and the world telling you, wow, something's wrong. If you need to stay in the house, you cannot get to work because you get ready, you start getting ready, but you have to turn the light switch off 20 times. And then you think you have to do it another 20. There are really people who cannot, and you might be one of them, who literally do not go out of the house. They lose jobs because they cannot leave. They have to do the light switch so many times. They have to check the door. They come back, they check, they go out. And literally they can waste, not waste, and it is a waste, but it's a compulsion. They cannot help it. And if you have an awareness of that, rather than staying in as a recluse, perhaps it's time to take the hard road and start exploring those options. What, maybe someone can help me. And go through the frustration of not being helped right away. Go through the frustration. These are some of the other things. So sometimes we can error and not be the full person that God wants us to be and that we need to be by simply waiting too long, saying, without even knowing that we're saying it, we just tend to withdraw. We don't decide, I do not want to go get help and I do not want to do this. So therefore, I'm just going to stay inside and be miserable. We rarely say those things. What we do is, and see if I know you do. I really do. I know that you identify with this. We don't tell ourselves that's what we're going to do. And when we're challenged, we know that somewhere in us, we kind of slip over into that mode where we do say, hey, we fold our arms and say, I'm just going to sit here. But when we're really diving into depression or when we're diving into anxiety or if we have obsessive compulsive disorder that keeps us from getting to work on time, let's say, or we have some other problem that keeps us locked in and we continue to just ignore it. That is better than pretending. It's ignoring. It's more like you withdraw and you have the opportunities of little, maybe this is your opportunity today. A little glimpse, a tiny little glimpse, like, just a glimpse. That's your first step. The glimpse that maybe you are self-perpetuating a very big problem that could be fixed. Maybe you're afraid of the fix. Maybe you're afraid something bad will happen. Maybe you're afraid that you won't get fixed. Maybe you're afraid that they'll find out that really it's all your fault. Maybe you'll find out you have something terrible. There's all these fears sometimes for getting help. They won't understand. I'll be laughed at. You're not going to go into your boss and say, I didn't show up at work today because I was turning the light switch on and off all day. And I would get to the car and I'd have to go back and recheck it. You're not going to tell your boss that. You're not going to tell your boss that you couldn't show up to work because you were vomiting your food or because you were crying in a big puddle on your pillow. And yet that happens to us often, or you're so anxious that you couldn't get down your food for whatever reason, you have anxiety. So we tend not to do that because we tend to think that people are going to think we're what? Crazy. Or they're going to think we're weak because strong people don't have that. There's an entire generation or many generations. It still happens. But I know the World War II generation, the ones that are still around, there are some that are in their 80s and 90s. The ones that are left, and many of them have had post-traumatic stress disorder their entire lives since World War II, and they never mentioned it because no one else ever did, and they thought what they were experiencing was a weakness. We will continue this on the other side of the break. I am Dr. Michelle.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. Jet-lagged and loving life. So as we march forward, as we go forward on these beautiful days, the days where we're heading into Lent, we're heading into March. March is, isn't it March? Out in like a lion, out like a lamb, something like that. But we have these wild fluctuations of weather all over the country. One minute it is gorgeous where I was and it was 70 degrees. The next minute it's freezing cold and gloomy. These wild fluctuations, crazy stuff. So when we're going to this, into this whole arena, and I have something very beautiful to read to you. Actually, it was written by Beethoven and it is one of the most beautiful, it's Opus 85. If any of you are Beethoven files, it's Opus 85 and it is Jesus or Christ on the Mount of Olives. And it is an opera, I guess, of Jesus, the Passion of Jesus. And it is absolutely beautiful. And it's in German. I don't understand German, so I looked up the English text. And there's a few things in there that are really going to help us through the way that Beethoven wrote Jesus and what he was saying. It's all very biblically based. But he was talking and the angel talks and it's just, it's unbelievable. It's just very, very beautiful. And it's going to help us to understand the depth that we need to go to and what this openness, what this suffering is really all about. And oftentimes, you know, I want to be able to bring in for you all that Jesus, we can say Jesus died for our sins. I still don't really get that. I really still don't get that. But Jesus died for our sins so that we can be saved. We say that. Christians say that all the time. And yet, and then we go to Lent where we give up something to align ourselves with suffering, with deprivation, because he was so deprived. And then we want to die to ourselves in order to rise again. And of course, we're also aligning ourselves with him in our sorrow and our sadness of how, what we do that is so intolerable to each other and thereby to God, because we're not loving God as we love ourselves. We're not loving our neighbor as we love ourselves and loving God above all things. So we tend to do that. Then we tend to get the other side. We give up something and there's a payoff. So we give up chocolate, we might lose a pound or two. Or we tend to lose sight of what it is we're actually gaining in the fullness of the sense of the word. So I'm going to go to that. I'm not positive we'll get to that today, but I sure would like to. So let's take a quick look at this idea of a common sense Lent, which I thought was a lovely concept. It's a Lent of opportunity, as they say. So we want to take a look at the idea of how do you align yourself in suffering if you are going to be approaching Lent so that you have a long-term payoff. Well, part of the long-term payoff, if you view it in a perspective of wholeness and healing in order to be the vessel that will allow God's light to shine from you, part of that is to get better physically, to get better mentally, to get better relationship-wise, socially, even financially. Now, we have downturns. And one should play off the other. It was the Philippians that I love so much about, I have learned to in all things to have contentment. I've learned both how to be abased and how to abound. So in other words, I've learned how to be the lowest of the low, and I've learned how to be among the highest of the high. I've learned how to starve. I've learned what to do when there's food in front of me. And in all things, because I will have nothing I brought into this world. I brought nothing into this world. And I will take nothing out of this world. Nothing. So with what I have, I will therefore be content. And if what you have is a mental illness, if what you have is an abandonment from a husband, if what you have is a child that you consecrated to the Virgin Mary and they're addicted to drugs and they're just involved in all kinds of debasement, or you yourself have an addiction, or you have a bad physical diagnosis, or everything you work for just got stolen, or you got laid off or fired, or delegated to the basement, as some executives I've worked with have done, where they were given time off for either an ill family member or something that they really needed it for, and it was very benevolent. But when they came back, oh, you won't lose your job. You'll still be up there in the hierarchy, just where you were. Title's still there, but nobody comes to them. And they're way down in the basement. Happens over and over. It's the way. It's kind of what we've done in this world now. You make the other person quit. You make them walk away. You don't take responsibility yourself by saying, no, we're just not going to do that. We really don't care. We have to run, so we're just kicking you out. At least you have something to fight against. But again, it's that same, we're pretending over here something's happening, and it just goes to erode people's self-esteem. It goes to erode their life because what they believe turned out not to be true. So if you're in that kind of situation, so in all these situations, we have to learn, therefore be content, in therewith be content. And that's a really hard order to follow. And it's so beautiful and so gentle. Good old Philippians. It's so beautiful and so gentle. And yet, in fact, I'm going to read that. It's so awesome. I think it's Philippians 4:11, maybe. I don't know. Not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am in, therewith to be content. I know both how to be abased and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things, I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ, which strengthens me. For godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. But having food and raiment, let us therewith be content. So as long as you have a thread on your body, and as long as you have food to eat, let us therewith be content. Very beautiful. Now, many of you are also, here comes right behind it. Great. I'm so glad that my computer decided to pop these things up from my notes, because this is lovely. It's 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 8 to 10. For we were so utterly burdened beyond our strength that we despaired of life itself. Indeed, we felt that we had received the sentence of death. But that was to make us rely not on ourselves, but on God, who raises the dead. He delivered us from such a deadly peril, and he will deliver us. On him we have set our hope that he will deliver us again. So again, hope. Now, utterly burdened. Beyond our strength, feeling of despairing of life itself. We felt like we had the sentence of death, and many of you do. Many of you do. We talk to each other, and oftentimes in times of plenty, we forget those times where we really did feel this way. But if you're in this state right now, or if you're are facing some difficulties, going back to a little bit lighter way of looking at things from this article, we want to make sure that we don't just sink. And that part of that sinking is a way that we can just say, well, I'm just this way. I've always been this way. I don't feel like it. I don't want to go out. I think people who go to the gyms every day are hypocrites, or I don't have the outfit, whatever it is, because you don't have to go to a gym. We have the what happened before gyms. We didn't have a bunch of fat people going around. Morbidly, I have nothing against fat people, but morbidly obese people. We had them all throughout history. You know that. Some cultures, it was very attractive to be very heavy for a while because people were starving and very thin meant you were very poor. So a lot of it is in how we view things. But it wasn't like we were an unhealthy earth before we had gyms. People walked, they tilled the earth, they picked up their children. They had to go somewhere to visit their neighbor. They couldn't just sit in a chair all day and text and then find everything. They had to go to a library if they wanted to get a book. So these things, we've kind of had some bad habits coming up. So when we return, we're going to get into a little lighter way of doing this, some ways that we can break this little habit just by a little tweaking of our perspective. It's pretty awesome. And if this is the first moment that you're thinking about this, This is your wake-up call. This is great. We'll see you on this side of the break. You're welcome to call in 573-4-BREAD-4 or text. We will see you after the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are with me on Dr. Michelle Live, walking this road together, sharing our hearts, swapping stories, looking at things as weirdly as possible so that we can shake ourselves out of the habits that we're in. I long for other perspectives. I love them. I long for them. And I get amazed and just like thrilled when I hear someone younger, someone older, someone different from a different country, perhaps just say something, just say a sentence about something. And they say it in words that I just wouldn't pick and words that people I know wouldn't pick. And it's like, I'm just like so refreshed because it's like, whoa, I feel like I've just had like a Christmas package. Something opened up and I think, oh gosh, I wish I could dive into this different way of looking at things. And it's not even that profound. It's just that the way it's described, they just might use a few different words, nothing huge. Nothing poetic, nothing you get on YouTube that's going to have a million hits because it's so out of this world. But all that opens up doors. We need to nurture that. So let's get into this idea of the Jonah 3:10, when God saw by their actions how they turned from their evil way. That started off this article on healthycatholics.com. And when they're talking about doing that, giving up all kinds of things, that we do tend to, you know, are we really turning away from our evil way? And when they describe evil way, referring back to Jonah and that language, the antiquated language, that there's a way that we can look at life and step away from just taking an item and say, I will not have that. I know that drinking more than 2 glasses of wine a night is not a good thing. So I'm only going to limit myself to 2, or I'm going to go to daily mass, or I'm going to, those are all very, very good things. But maybe if you are suffering from these mental illnesses, if you're suffering from some other things, it's stepping out of the habit of 1, ignoring it, 2, maybe just taking medication and being content with, I have an illness, so therefore I'm going to just take a pill. I have a problem, therefore I have a problem with alcohol, therefore I'm just going to accept that I have that problem and do what I can not to drink as much. All those things in themselves are not bad, but it may not be enough. We know that people in physical with physical, you know them, you have them in your family. You have a diabetic uncle. You have a person who has had bypass surgery or some stents put in, and yet they're still drinking, they're still smoking, and they're still overweight. You know those people. You might be those people. We have these problems. We have these problems that we do all the time. We think about it. We read about it. I've told you I had some injuries myself, and some of those injuries caused me not to be able to sit. And when I sit, it hurts. And if I get up and walk around, it doesn't hurt. And I thanked God for that, because it could have been the reverse, that I wouldn't be able to walk, but I could sit. And then that would bring on a whole host of other problems. But what ends up happening sometimes is that you end up avoiding things just naturally, because it's uncomfortable. And then other problems set in. It's like when you have to have bed rest, and if you rest too long and you don't breathe properly, or someone doesn't help you along, then you're at risk for pneumonia. So we want to just look at these things, a big perspective. I know I'm kind of like giving you this big, I'm opening up the cafeteria here and just saying, here's a bunch of food. Now, what are we going to do about it? So one of the things that we need to look at is our physical self and our emotional self first. Are we doing anything to ignore the obvious? Are we refusing or withdrawing so much that we are not, we just decided we really don't have that big of a problem, or that's just the way I am, and we're not getting the help we need, or we're not taking the initiative we need? We go ahead and eat. I used to know a doctor. A doctor who was diabetic, and he'd eat anything he wanted, anytime he wanted. He just carried around his little insulin thing, and he would just do his insulin in this most erratic way, as if that was going to be healthy. He was not healthy. And when he retired, he just got worse and worse and worse and worse, because he was not willing to say, you know, I really need to get help here. And then I really need to do something about it. I need to be more regimented and more disciplined. So let's look at the things they talk about. They've got four lovely things. One, eat healthily or according to a doctor's suggestion. So you eat healthily. Or according to doctor's suggestions, sometimes you have to give up some healthy food. If you're a diabetic, you're not just going to eat a bunch of fruit. You're going to have to do some different things, because your body has to readjust. But in doing that, in thinking about eating healthy, oftentimes we have to have Lenten sacrifice along with that. This is the point they're making. And part of that Lenten sacrifice is, let's say we have no physical problem, but part of it could be that I'm not going to eat on the run, that I'm going to make sure that I do eat what I do eat, eat healthy as much as I can, but I'm not going to eat on the run. I'm going to sit for one moment. I'm going to thank God beforehand. So it causes you to be calmer, which is healthy. To slow down while you eat, which is healthy. To be grateful, which is healthy. So you're mentally, physically healthy and spiritually healthy. This is another thing, the sleep regularly. Sleeping regularly, even though that doesn't sound like a Lenten sacrifice, what that means is, as they say, this entails the giving up bad habits such as interminable amounts of screen time. This has been something I've done. just fall asleep with streaming Netflix, and Netflix will never end. It'll just keep streaming. So all night long it's on, and you will not, by definition, I did a whole program on that, you're not getting the good sleep that you need, which will eventually go to mental problems and physical problems. Exercise. Now, what does exercise entail giving up? What they say in this article is it entails giving up laziness and excuses. Yes, it does. Every day, I think I'm going to take that walk. All I have to do is just a half hour. Let's just have a half hour. We can do a half hour. There's always a reason. No, I have to attend to this. I have to attend to that. I have to answer this email. I have to do this. I have to do that. So if we actually refocus, and rather than saying that we have to have all these different clothes and have a gym membership, but we just commit to a small thing and realize that we're giving up laziness. You're giving up excuses. You're giving up your desire to your comfortable lifestyle of being stuck. You're giving up victimization. How about that? And then number four, be with people more frequently. This entails giving up isolation, which is the breeding place for negative ruminations and self-deprecating thoughts. Now, we're running out of time. I want to start with that sentence tomorrow, because that is a really important thing. Actually, not tomorrow, because it's Friday, so we'll start Monday. But this is what they call the common sense Lent, the Lent of opportunity. It's the kind of Lent that will give long-term changes, but you actually are sacrificing. So you get the fruits of repentance while you are making healthy choices that are actually going to benefit you in the long run. And why is that good? It's good because the more you benefit, the more you can allow, you can be the proper vessel. The more, if you had a lantern and it's all, you got run over by a car, you can still put a candle in there, but it's not going to illuminate the way it needs to illuminate. So you just, you get it back to a really good shape as much as you can. So you can change little by little the way that you do things. And when they go back to the concept of the people of Nineveh and Jonah and what Jonah was supposed to tell them, to change their ways, to change their evil ways, it's the little things that little by little, God's watching them and saying, you know what? I'm watching that baby step. I'm watching that you did not, you actually got up and you walked to your mailbox and back on purpose. And you didn't just drive by it. You did it so that your legs would walk and your blood will flow. So these are all really important things that, in the one hand, perspective is that they're all very positive and very healthy things to do, but they also are sacrificing those places that, like it or not, we have to admit, that's one of the first ways to start this step of 1,000 miles. The one step is to admit that I've actually become comfortable in the victimization role, or I've actually become comfortable in saying, well, this is the way I am. It's been an excuse for my life. I can't really do that. I can't really be around people because I don't sleep well, or I can't really do this. I can't really eat around other people because I have this problem. I can't exercise because I'm just too busy. Always in the car with the kids. I'm always doing this. I'm always doing that. So this is Dr. Michelle. I want you to think about those things, because we can do this together. We can make this a Lenten walk. We'll talk to you Monday. I hope you have a blessed and wonderful first step weekend. This is Dr. Michelle.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.